selling one's automobile. It can be a challenge, it can be something which we might meet as a wonderful opportunity to actually make a little extra finance, but it's fraught with challenges and difficulties and so on. And to address the best way of actually becoming a savvy seller when it comes to selling your car, we're delighted to welcome a true legend when it comes to broadcasting issues, whether it's from the I'm a Celebrity era, from the Royal Correspondent world, from Cash in the Attic, or indeed our very own rip-off Britain. It's Jenny Bond. Jenny, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Fine, thanks.
So this particular piece, which very much slots into your campaigns and superlative work with Rip Off Britain, that really, if we want to sell our car, we'd be better off, according to Gumtree at least, using the private seller's market as opposed to going to one of those other areas that would say, we'll sell it for you.
I think that's right. And I think you're right to say it's quite a challenging, I'd say actually, everything when you come to sell your car, because I mean your car's one of the most expensive things you're ever going to buy in your life, really, and getting rid of it is fraught with difficulties. There are a lot of really sharp operators out there. I sold my last car privately, and I very much wish I'd done a bit more research, actually, because I just answered when those ads said I'll buy, you know, any car or whatever, and he came over and he gave me £150 for a really quite nice Honda, and as it went off up the drive, I thought, what am I doing? Why did I do that? So I think you need to put a bit more work into it.
Jenny, if you'd sold it on eBay just as Driven by Jenny Bond, you would have magnified it by a factor of 10 at least, you know, probably hundreds.
Or even Gumtree.
Exactly.
I've used Gumtree actually for different reasons. I used it actually to find two carers for my mother. And I was very impressed. And so I was interested in this research that's been done by Gumtree, which shows that on average, you're probably going to make about £1,000 more, and possibly a lot more than that, if you sell privately. And through their research, they've established that the best way to do it is to clean your car up, put a realistic price on it, be open to negotiation, and see what happens. And this could reach, on this site, 14 million people a month. So you've got a big old audience out there.
Absolutely. I mean, of course, there's always the emotional concerns that go into selling one's car as well. It can be quite fraught with other bits and pieces. But in terms of the way that the year goes around, I mean, is there a particularly good time of the year to sell cars? I mean, would we say it's best to sort of think about selling in June, July, as opposed to December, January?
Well, Gumtree told me that actually September and March are their peak times. September even more than March. In my own case, I'm going to be very careful when I come to sell my old banger, and she is bigging. She's a bit of an old banger now, a bit like me, actually.
Nonsense.
And she's... No, I treated myself to a hardtop convertible. It's only a Ford Focus. It's nothing flash. About 8 years ago. But I put an awful lot of miles on the clock. And so, as it happens, I think with a convertible, you've got to think... Actually, in the summertime, people see you out and about and they think, oh, I want a bit of that. So good time to sell convertibles, I think, probably summer. But in general, September or March are the peaks.
We talked about, obviously, the advantages of selling privately, but there's been a swathe of media material, it would seem, sort of saying, oh, you could get fraught with all sorts of challenges, you shouldn't sell privately, and so on. What are the risks in terms of actually selling privately? I mean, quite apart from people obviously making appointments and then not turning up and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, those kind of problems have been the case with any kind of classified ads that you know, put in newspapers historically, you know, or whatever. Of course, there's a lot more now that these websites are open. There's a lot more selling privately, but there's a lot more safety recognition as well. Gumtree is very much part of the Get Safe Online. There's a dedicated safety page. And you just got to be sensible about it, haven't you? I mean, I think you wouldn't invite someone round to your home if you were going to be there alone, particularly probably if you're a woman, you know. Take your car to a public place. Say, we'll meet up there. We'll meet, you know, in the town centre and we'll discuss this. Be sensible. Don't, for goodness sake, let them go off and do a test drive in your car alone.
No,
because they may not come back and neither will your car. So be sensible, be shrewd and be safe.
Looking at some of the statistics from Gumtree, of course, so we see that Vauxhall is the most common make to be listed, with Ford and then Volkswagen's following shortly behind. Has the end come for the Rover then? I mean, I'm thinking my own classic Rover 25, or is there still a market for that?
Well, I think you'll find, actually, all sorts of cars listed there. I mean, Lamborghinis are listed, so I'm sure you're going to find some of your Rovers there too. I looked up my car, actually, yesterday, because I knew I was going to do this. I looked it up on another website, and I was absolutely appalled to find they were offering me £1,500 for my lovely lady. And then I looked it up on Gumtree, and actually, it was more than double. So you're probably not going to achieve that full asking price, but I'm not certainly going to go down to 1500,
which is certainly part and parcel of the negotiating process. In terms of finding out further information, is it best to go to Gumtree directly?
Yes, gumtree.com, and you'll see all the information there and just about any car you could possibly desire.
Sort of adds stickability to the whole thing. And in terms of I mean, you said, you talked about obviously the makes of cars and various other factors. Lamborghinis are there, you tend to think, oh, that could be quite extraordinary in all sorts of ways. But any particular sort of line where you'd sort of say, well, beware of, shall we say, the foreign cars? I'm thinking about the old line that if you could actually, in the days of old, put petrol in the fuel of a Skoda, you'd double its value. That's all changed these days, of course.
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, you've got to be careful. I think buying any car privately or indeed from a car dealer, I always approach it with a healthy measure of scepticism and ask a lot of questions. You know, you want to see all the documents if you're buying, and you want to make sure you've got them all ready to show a potential buyer. Mm. So get yourself organised, get your relevant paperwork together. And, you know, both my advice would be both for the seller and the potential buyer. Ask a lot of questions and be sensible.
When you're selling a car, it's a bit like selling a house. I mean, the line in terms of selling a house is if you could actually have fresh bread or the smell of fresh bread, the aroma of fresh bread, you'd actually sort of increase the value. Is there something like that that you can do with cars as well? Get a sort of special odour that sort of permeates the vehicle?
No. I don't like this air freshness, do you? No, I really don't like this much. But, we don't want to have a lot of dog hairs and cigarette smoke, or we don't want, old...
get it valeted. That's the key thing. Get it valeted.
Yes, I suppose so. Or do it yourself. I'm a great one for doing it yourself. But, I mean, I live in my car a lot, and so it's fairly disgusting at the end of a work trip. But I do then clear it out. So that is something you definitely should do before you invite someone round to buy it.
It is a working office, Jenny, at the end of the day. A working office, a portable office, or indeed, as one of our American correspondents would say, a mobile conveyance lounge. Which is a way forward.
and a restaurant, it's everything these days.
Jenny, it's been splendid just touching base with your good self and providing us with some fascinating and very useful information there with respect to Gumtree. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you? It's our customer satisfaction survey.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm very... Yes, I'll give you a 10.
Oh,
I think I will.
There we are. So can we possibly prevail upon your good self to join us again in the not-too-distant future? I'm thinking, actually, we should do a double act with yourself and our other regular correspondent, Angela Rippon, to sort of do the full sort of setup on that hard side of things. Will you return?
Oh, Angie and I, yes. Why not? Yes, we're great old mates. Yes, that would be great fun.
Well, that makes perfect sense, really. In fact, it almost leads into the perfect cue when we should press this button here.
I'm Angela Rippon, and I'm with Alex Leftchuk on Siren FM.
And so is Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, Richard?
Oh, only too pleased to hear the voice of Angela Rippon, who I've seen and met a great deal over the years. A delight, indeed. I think she was the first female broadcaster that I included in the international Who's Who.
Good heavens.
Many years ago,
absolutely.
But well deserved.
And, of course, Jenny Bond, who is equally august in her own wonderful way, talking about, of course, selling cars. Dog hairs, obviously not good if you're looking to sell cars, but still, it's a thought.
I'll drive them, and I think no comment, but don't quote me, I don't drive.
Yeah, well, there we are, you see. We'd like to wish Rachel Warren happy birthday, because it's Rachel's birthday
happy
today.
Happy birthday, Rachel.
Exactly. She was with us last year, in fact, when we connected with yourself, actually, at the National Theatre, as opposed to the National Portrait Gallery. She's now based in Norwich, so great stuff there. Happy birthday, Rachel, as we've just done. As we neatly move on to something, you probably didn't catch the show last night, but I bowled out three scores, Richard. This is before we go on to your oeuvre today, which is, as ever, up to speed. But there were three movies I saw pretty much back-to-back last Friday, and I gave one of them 10 out of 10, one 9.5 out of 10, and one probably 5 to 6 out of 10. Okay.
What were they?
Well, this is. Let's see if you, because Christy Bond managed to identify this last night. I wonder if you could do it. They were, in no particular order, of course, Inside Out, the Pixar movies classic,
which has been well reviewed. Absolutely.
Ant-Man. And
9.5. That's generous.
I haven't matched anything at this particular stage. You know, I haven't matched the scores to the actual things. These are just the movies I've seen. I've given those scores out there, and we just wait and see. And A Royal Night Out, which curiously Phil Leonis had not heard about. So obviously we need to spread the word with respect to that excitement. It's almost a docudrama, really, of Her Majesty the Queen and so on.
Resemblance to what actually happened. It certainly wasn't only a docudrama. That one that you give
Richard.
I have to say, utter tosh.
Hold it back. Remember, remember, one of those movies got 10, one of those got 9.5, the other one got 5 to 6.
5, I'm absolutely amazed. I'm shocked. Shocked. It's obviously 5 for A Royal Night Out, obviously 10 for Inside Out, so that only leaves 1, doesn't it? So I've cracked the code.
Well, not quite, because it was 10 for Ant-Man and 9.5 for Inside Out, but I might be persuaded to move
10
that.
10 for Ant-Man, but why, after that last rather messy half hour, too many ideas flung around? Good ideas, to be sure.
It's open to debate, but I thought that you had the Stan Lee cameo, you had the nod in the direction of the classic narrative text for Janet Van Dyne, Lost in the Microverse, you had the closing teaser for the next trailer at the end, you had everything from that point of view which you actually needed. Royal Night Out, I must admit, it's an interesting experience in science fiction in its own routine. Do you know, astonishingly, Richard, I was the only person in the cinematic audience for A Royal Night Out.
You know, of course you were, but because, in fact, you shouldn't have bothered to see it. You played the bit in my archive when I
said it
was a load of absolute.
Right. Well, you obviously. Well, you
said. So, where is it showing? This is the thing. Which cinema is stupid enough to be showing?
Now, please, this was part of the Showcase Cinemas on Teesside. And again, there was sort of two.
Ah, yes. Well, that was. Royal Night Out was absolute rubbish.
Okay. Oh, well,
born high as an elephant's eye,
as they would have said in Oklahoma. But let's move on, because we're not doing musicals. We're doing Southpaw, which is a hard hitting. I mean, is it the 21st century version of Rocky? Are we up to that level?
No, we're not up to that level, because it's directed by Antoine Fuqua. And I have to say, the moment I read this, he is not noted for subtlety. Training Day did get an Oscar for Denzel Washington. Denzel Washington should not have got an Oscar for Training Day, but for Poor American Gangster, in my opinion. I didn't think it was a particularly good movie, because he goes for overkill, as he did with King Arthur. And here we have Billy Hope, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, a superb actor. He's a boxer who lives in New York City with his wife Maureen, played by the lovely Rachel McAdams, and he has a daughter, Layla, played by Una Lawrence. He wins the World Light Heavyweight Championship, but his injuries lead his wife to be concerned about his future and feeling he should retire. The problem is, at a charity event, he's taunted by Miguel Magic Escobar, and in a subsequent brawl, Miguel's brother Hector accidentally shoots Maureen, and Billy's world absolutely collapses. He attacks a referee, he's suspended, his house is repossessed, he hits the bottle, he crashes his car whilst he's intoxicated, he loses custody of his child, etc., etc. I have to say, the plot in this movie, it's absolutely choking with cliches. He gets a job at a gym run by Titus Tick Wills, played by Forrest Whitaker, also a boxer, and he becomes his trainer and starts the fight back. Now, we could have predicted this entire plot. What saves this movie? Well, basically, Forrest Whitaker puts in a first-class performance, and he helps. And Jake Gyllenhaal is a very fine actor, and although I was rather tired of endless close-ups of his, his face is ravaged, not just by boxing, but by everything else that he does with his life. But it has to be said, a very good performer. Una Lawrence puts in a fine turn as Layla. Rachel McAdams is absolutely gorgeous, but she is removed pretty early. There are close-ups, there's a static script, there is a predictable storyline, and it's overlong. But what there is, and I will intend to hooks for this, is a well-filmed climactic fight between Miguel and Billy, and whereas you might not be on tenterhooks, no spoilers here as to who wins, the fact of the matter are the movie does overall just about deliver, despite being swamped in clichés. I think the fans will find it fun.
Okay, well, tough call, because I'll let you know again, little insight here, and of course our listener. I was torn initially between Royal Night Out and Southpaw. In the end, Royal Night Out won.
Why?
I just felt, you know, because folks such as yourself had said it was so challenging in its own way, I felt, let's give it a chance. And I say 5.5 to 6 out of 10. I mean, you know, some interesting answer. Enough. We won't talk about it anymore because we'll be talking about a royal welcome to Buckingham Palace shortly. But meanwhile, what about Best of Enemies?
No, but Best of Enemies is a fascinating movie because this is... Well, I mean, it is something I would like to see on television in the States more, and I'd love to see it here. We had it to some extent, that it was obviously one man doing it with Barry Norman. The duels between intellectuals, an intellectual, somebody who on screen can talk to you. Norman did it very much with his film reviews. You felt he was part and parcel of, well, almost a friend talking to you in your home, but of course he wasn't involved in duels. The duels that we remember, Roger Ebert, the finest film critic ever, certainly a national figure in America, versus Gene Siskel, these were intellectual duels. We had verbal sparring, and I found it absolutely fascinating to see the movie recently on Ebert's life. And here we have another duel. This was really a duel to, as it were, the death, in a sense, of a legendary figure who felt he couldn't lose his cool, and he did. The conservative pundit and editor of the National Review, William F. Buckley, was fighting the Serbic liberal pundit Gore Vidal. The two absolutely loathed each other. What was fascinating, what they had in common, was voices which were very patrician and had, they both had, as one could say, a sort of a drawl, a longer. It was extraordinary to see these figures because you'd never see them on television today. And that ABC in 1968, but it couldn't afford to rival the other networks' coverage of the Republican and Democratic national conventions, decided to have a scaled-down commentary at the end of the day, and they were saving money, but they'd put on a couple of intellectuals who had huge followings. Buckley was considered a conservative icon. Vidal was considered a liberal.
You're saying they went talking heads? And by the way, let's just make sure that people don't get confused with the Guy Hamilton-directed 1961 movie The Best of Enemies, which was about the bond between British and Italian officers in North Africa during World War II.
With David Niven and Alberta.
Exactly, exactly.
Really funny. Yes. My father served in North Africa and found it absolutely hilarious. Ah. Yes, an important point to make. We see these... Well, they're both giants, intellectual giants in the context of that time, with a lot of talking heads.
Gore Vidal, of course, was prone to say that contemporary America was simply echoing the days or the last days of Rome.
Yes, he was, and he was also involved, most interestingly, and we do see a clip from this, in helping with or adding to, he doesn't get official credit for it, the script of Ben-Hur, and inventing a homosexual relationship between Ben-Hur and Messala when they were boys and played together. The fact of the matter, this was in Judea, but Charlton Heston was not in on the joke. Billy Wilder, the director, was, and certainly William Wilder, the director, was, and also Stephen Boyd as Messala. And there's a scene where you can see what Vidal has planned. Heston only learnt of it many years later and exploded with wrath. But the facts were, Vidal was, he was mischievous, and of course his Myra Breckinridge. According to Vidal, there was no such thing as normal sexuality. Everybody, he said, was bisexual. Buckley regarded him as the epitome of decadence. And when you had, and this was 68, of course, you had the Republican National Convention, you had those terrible, chaotic, violent scenes at the Democratic Convention, but you also had two people who absolutely loathed each other, swapping insults, views, and news. And when the famous exchange because Buckley believed, underestimated Vidal to begin with. He didn't do his homework. Vidal had Buckley on the defensive because, though no reader, putting it mildly, of the National Review, he'd thought up some lines and done research on quotes. But the famous occasion when Buckley lost his cool was when Vidal called him. They were talking about the anti-war protesters. Buckley likened them to fascists. Vidal replied, "The only pro or Christo Nazi I can think of is yourself." And Buckley actually lost it and said, I quote, "Now listen, you queer, stop calling me a crypto Nazi or I'll sock you in your goddamn face and you'll stay plastered."
Well, it sounds like an average meeting at the BBC these days, but two men, 10 debates, television would never be the same again. Best of enemies, Buckley versus Vidal. And it's the documentary footage.
BBC, with so little money that their set actually collapsed, nonetheless managed to increase their ratings, but that was in the 60s. Oh. No such thing, unfortunately, occurs these days. But it's a fascinating movie. I mean, this again has excellent talking heads and voiceovers, Kelsey Grammer and John Lithgow, as Buckley and Vidal, both are now deceased. But those days, intellectuals wielded punch.
There are many people who would actually say that television is an outgoing scenario in any case. But that's a different line.
Well, it is indeed. But I mean,
it's just radio with pictures.
It's riveting, however, to see the two attacking each other. I wish we'd seen more. If the movie has a fault, we don't see quite enough of the two actually launching tirades.
If they'd gone into Southpaw territory, they could have actually fought it out. They could have duped each other out from that point of view. Just a thought.
That's a good idea. Come to judgment, another Daniel.
Yeah. Very sad you haven't gone for the fifth Mission Impossible movie with Tom Cruise, actually. I'm sure that'll get purged. But stay with us, because we want to find out about Buckingham Palace a bit more. Of course, the opening has officially taken place. And just for your good self, of course, because we ended the show last night with it, Christopher Beck's superlative theme from Ant-Man. Doubts I might have had with respect to Age of Ultron are not quite sort of hitting the base, swaged quite dramatically by Ant-Man. I could almost see you there, Richard, as we approach 29 minutes past 8 o'clock here on Siren 107.3 FM, just strapping on the costume and being all set and ready to actually leap into action across Buckingham Palace and do all sorts of other supreme gymnastic skills.
I wouldn't, because you may recall Fathers for Justice, one of the...
That was Spider-Man, not Ant-Man. That's a different line entirely.
Yes, it most certainly was, but it was within the not dissimilar genre. I think he dressed as Superman.
Ah, well, there we are, you see. But still, a different company. That's DC Comics as opposed to Marvel. Got to be precise about these things.
True indeed.
On September...
Indeed, which is precisely what the royal family are when they welcome guests.
Well...
ceremonial.
It's not a royal night out, it's a royal welcome to Buckingham Palace, which once again, between July 25th, which of course was last Saturday, and September 27th, which of course is still to come. During that period, you can sign up for tickets to actually see Buckingham Palace. Presumably you were there for the press view on the 24th of July, Richard.
Yes, I must
have. I thought you might have been.
And I have to say that it's absolutely magnificent, because the Queen has welcomed 110 heads of state on formal state visits to Britain. I would emphasize, by the way, that the monarchy, as I see it, is absolutely pivotal in projecting soft power, because these are meaningful visits. Both the trips the Queen makes abroad state visits and visits to other countries. She's the world's most travelled monarch, but also the visits that heads of state pay here, and I most especially mention the Queen's visit in 2011 to Ireland and what that led to, the fact that President Michael D. Higgins came on a state visit here in 2014, and the fact that the Queen was so popular in Ireland, we actually saw a change in the policy of Sinn Féin. So when Prince Charles recently visited Ireland, as you know, Gerry Adams, the president of Sinn Féin, asked to meet him. And, I mean, this is the way, the best possible way that diplomacy is conducted. Of course, the politicians had a great deal to do with it, and, of course, the situation in Ireland had radically changed for various reasons. But that is just an example I wanted to give, where the monarchy, in fact, as I see it, is so indispensable to us and works in so many important ways for Britain abroad. This is British business.
I can almost hear the fury being raised by Republicans across the land.
There aren't many of them. It's only about 18%.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Comrades poll, 70% supported the monarchy, 18% Republicans. And if you actually look at what this exhibition shows, the banquet is absolutely magnificent in the palace's ballroom. And, I mean, the silver gilt centerpieces, the candelabra, the cutlery, the place settings. What's interesting is not only the spectacle, and you've seen this very frequently. Listeners will have often seen it on the news where you'd see the toasts and sometimes clips from speeches and so forth. But it also gives you an idea of the enormous amount of planning involved to put an operation like this with the precision required, with the beauty, the spectacle, the flowers, the amazing.
But Richard, if we look at the finances, the budget for the Ant-Man movie would only pay for 5 years of repairs for Buckingham Palace, you know?
Now the repairs to Buckingham Palace, you switched the topic. I would remind you one of the reasons for this is that the Queen's budget, the money given to the Queen in the days of the civil list from 1991 to 2011-12 was frozen for 20 years. The Department of Culture, Media and Sport was in fact responsible for giving money to the royal family for the refurbishment of royal palaces, and a very substantial backlog was built up, and this most recent estimate of 150 million, and we haven't yet seen a schedule.
And that could have sort of funded probably, you know, a couple of Ant-Man movies.
Well, the way to look at it is, I think it's very important. I went down to see Changing the Guard recently, just to see the numbers of tourists who go to see it, and there were tens of thousands there. There's Trooping the Colour, their various royal anniversaries, you know, celebrated in the forecourt of, or in the amazing walkway that is the Mall. And also there are the investitures held at Buckingham Palace, the garden party, 60,000 plus guests.
2,000 honorees, and none of them wearing orange bras, but let's not go there, please.
Well,
totally
different
exactly.
Topic. I think you are skipping, and I'm concentrating on the fact that this is an exhibition that really has a wonderful, wonderful centrepiece.
And of course, as we might have said last week, if time hadn't been against us, the good thing about going to Buckingham Palace is you don't have to do any Heil salutes whatsoever. There won't be any Heil stones there in any way, shape or form.
I have to say that I did not approve of the release of that footage.
Oh, well.
If you consider, and I was watching the King's speech very recently, in the last week, in fact, it just reminds you how important the symbols of the royal family were during the war.
The Lord for the divorcee, Wallace Simpson. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened? There's
absolutely no doubt that when it came to Edward VIII, a mixture of selfishness, ambition, and the 1937 visit to Germany. I mean, we are diverging on paths that all I could say is, frankly, that I think it was gratuitous and exploitative, as I said in The Scotsman, for the Sun to publish those photographs and that footage.
Yes, but we know that Rupert Murdoch is a Republican, so we don't need to go there.
He's a Republican, but that doesn't necessarily mean that as any editor and photo editor, they will consider photographs and footage and what to publish and the reason.
Quite right. It should have gone into the Guardian.
That were, in my opinion, the ones that should have prevailed, and they didn't, I'm afraid. I think it's pretty sick, actually, because it was make, obviously making fun of Hitler. And if you want embarrassing footage, look at Lloyd George or look at Shaw in 1933-34 talking about the great leader. Who
Richard,
was,
I remember it well. Let's move on. Time is
knew he was a murderous monster. So.
Exactly. And let's not go into other sort of zones at this particular stage. Just very briefly, in terms of Buckingham Palace, can people still book for tickets? Or is it a case of, well, you've teased us, but they've all been sold out? I mean, presumably you do have to book online. What's the procedure in terms of people listening to this who fancy going to see Buckingham Palace?
Who fancy going, you get advance tickets and visitor information, www.royalcollection.org.uk, 0207 766 7300, and you can find out what the situation is regarding tickets. Half a million have visited Buckingham Palace. That's the rough figure. And I would also point out, it's a very important point to make, that visitors to occupied royal palaces, the proceeds go to fund and keep the Royal Collection, which is one of the world's greatest art collections. Charles I, George IV, the two monarchs you have to give a nod to for their amazing skill in collecting fabulous paintings. And the exhibitions at the Queen's Gallery are marvellous. It's the way also that a lot of these works go around the country. It's something that's very important to stress.
Okay, enough royalty. Let's move on very briefly to the play at the Vaudeville. It's David Suchet, Hercule Poirot, and of course his brother is a fine newsreader, in The Importance of Being Earnest.
Oh yes, but this is terrific because, you know...
A hen's beg?
I know Edith Evans is identified forever with her famous way she says handbag.
A hen's beg? Sorry.
Absolutely. Now, wait to see how Suchet, who's in fact a truly remarkable actor, as you say, is the quintessential Hercule Poirot, but also, no question at all, that I've seen him in so many great theatre performances on stage, Amadeus, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Oliana, there's a very important list of them, but he'd never tried this sort of light comedy, this sort of satire, and he's an imperious nouveau riche Lady Bracknell, but also the aspects of the way he handles, no spoilers again, because it's important to go and enjoy, and it's also important to see how the audience responded to this production, where you can hear every word, I would add, not the case in every West End theatre.
No. Sometimes the mumbles are quite good. After all, where would Southpaw be without the mumbles? Southpaw, Best of Enemies, The Importance of Being Earnest, and a trip to Royal Welcome, Buckingham Palace. Sensational stuff. Richard, have you had...
Being Earnest must be recommended. It's also the case that it's an extremely good supporting cast, but see Suchet in a role you never thought you'd ever see him.
There you go. Have you had a recently interesting telephonic...
Marvellous.
Have you enjoyed the piece today, Richard? Has it
been
good for you?
Yes,
good. I've sent you, whilst we've been talking, a full link to the National Portrait Gallery material, easily found, and all Richard Fitzwilliam's material, so you can access that and listen to it at your leisure from that sort of point of view. So,
and anyone who has leisure should go to The Importance of Being Earnest at the Vaudeville.
Makes perfect sense. Up next, we'll be speaking to young singer-songwriter from New York, although she's going to Nashville. That would be Emma Lane.
Is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
It's fair to say that we're always very impressed with young musicians across the globe, and we feature them either in our regular Live from Nashville slot or indeed in various other live music sequences that, of course, the East Midlands Radio Station of the Year is becoming renowned for in all sorts of ways, together with southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. It's a genuine delight, though, to be able to welcome a young lady who has actually got up at 6 a.m., in fact, earlier than that, because that's when we're actually doing this particular interview in the joys of the city of New York. New York, New York, so good they named it twice, primarily because Emma Lane lives there. Emma Lane, welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Excellent. Delighted to feature your good self, because you are not only going to be a sensational singer, songwriter, etc. It's also a case of Little Bit of Something is just an absolutely magical tune.
Thanks. That's great to hear.
Well, you know, this is one of the reasons why folk from Los Angeles recommend you to actually come on the whole sequence, which is very important. Now, you're defined in the biography as a country rock singer, songwriter and guitarist originally from Western New York. And indeed, it's fair to say that your parents, their genes have kind of sent the music through you to culminate in sheer magic.
Yes, I would agree with that. Hmm.
Well, that's very
important. Born into a musical family, for sure.
Yeah. And you know, clearly New York is responsible for so much good quality music. It's interesting, though, that, you know, based in New York with a country theme, would you say, that sort of country rock thing, I mean, clearly the days of country and western are so 20th century, we don't even talk about them now. It's country music, it's Americana. I mean, would you basically just say, look, I'm a musician, and the fact that it kind of crosses genres is just par for the course, really?
Well, I'm actually from Western New York. That's where I am. I'm not I'm not in New York City right now.
Right.
I'm actually closer to Canada in Rochester.
Ah.
So we have a big music scene, but really, for country, country's kind of countrywide over here, and it's a really cool thing because I know a lot of people here in New York and they think of the city, but I'm actually out in farms and there's cows and apple farms and things like that. So I think that was just a really big popular genre anyway, but that's just kind of how I wrote more.
Yeah. Well, I suppose actually working within the farmyard or the farming environment means that you're always used to getting up fairly early in the morning, because otherwise those cows are not going to get milked. Quite simply, it's a case of working through that. Now, in terms of awards, Songwriter of the Month in March 2013, that was before you even made your debut EP. It must have been something special to actually sort of get that award straight away, when obviously FRETI, National Songwriting Community, effectively named you Songwriter of the Month. That must have been quite a little buzz, really.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible, because I had just had a few, kind of pretty bad YouTubes. I mean, they weren't horrible, but I think they were recorded
Emma,
on my mom's
Emma,
Kodak.
Emma, you couldn't do a horrible YouTube. It would be impossible, you know, just being Emma Lane. That's all you need to do. You know, that's it, you know.
Thank you. But, the guy who created it, his name is Dennis, and he just saw me on YouTube, and he was like, you have to join this community. And I was one of the first 9 artists to actually do it, to be on that. And then when he asked me to be Songwriter of the Month, I was shocked because I didn't have anything. I mean, I had done demos back when I was like 16, but, you know, nobody heard those. So I was really shocked that he had even asked just from a YouTube video.
Well, it just shows the power of the social media and so on. Of course, from then on, you went to Nashville. You recorded your debut EP, Noise from the Basement. That brought 6 national nominations for vocals and songwriting in 2014. And you won Best Country Recording for your first single, At the Crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. Now, we're going to take a mini break now, if that's okay, Emma, because we want to actually sort of savour the joy of something we've been pushing out quite solidly here on Siren 107.3 FM since we were first made aware of the magic that is Emma Lane. And it's your latest single, which is Little Bit of Something. Would you like to introduce it so we get a nice little feel-good factor and we sort of take this through 3 minutes, 16 seconds of sheer magic?
Sure. This is my current single. I'm Emma Lane, and this is a Little Bit of Something.
Baby, why you looking so sad? I can't even remember when you sang the sad song. it's not so bad. The past is in the past, it's time to move on. You'll feel much better when you're mine. Just give me something.
Your co-writer Christy Jackson, Emma Lane is a class act and a force. Genius. Emma Lane and the tremendous Little Bit of Something. Wonderfully put together. And it actually gets better each time. I've heard that now about three or four times. You know, once just to check that it didn't have any sort of adult rated words and you didn't go all sort of, you know, two-pick Shamir on us. Well, you never know. You never know with respect to broadcast friendly. And it was fine from that point of view. And then I thought, this is good. It sort of hooks you in terms of it's magical. I mean, would you say that's the best you've produced so far? Is it a case of no, there are lots more in the oeuvre that you can actually listen to?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, that was just kind of a different kind of song. It was just more fun and flirty, but I think I have had some great songs before, and I think I'm going to continue to have some great songs.
Absolutely, that's undoubted. I mean, interesting in terms of, I was initially thinking it's like a classic from the, I think, 1970s, where it's Take a Little Piece of My Heart, you know, take a little piece of my heart, and which we're together. But it's a lot brighter than that, so it's sparky from that point of view. We can also, of course, add to your official website, which, of course, is emmalanemusic.com, that Siren 107.3 FM in Lincoln, and indeed Southside Broadcasting, will also be spinning the tune, so you can add that to 92.5 The B, 94.1 The Zone, etc, etc. So in fact, if you consider yourself a radio station to have any credibility whatsoever, you should insist on playing Emma Lane. If you listen to this and you want to actually write to your local radio station via podcast, etc, then do so, because the world should not be deprived of the joys of Emma Lane. There we are, that's the official line for the whole thing. Emma, I mean, when we did this sort of, we were setting up the sort of time for this, obviously we said you're getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to actually do the interview. There are people who would doubtless be listening to this and saying, I can't believe it's 6 o'clock. You mean there are 2 6 o'clocks in the day? You know, it's working through it. Because you're off to do what now? I mean, after you've actually done this piece, is it a case of back to the studio now? Or are you sort of doing work? I mean, are you a jobbing musician? What does the rest of the day have in store for yourself?
I do both. So actually, there's 2 5 o'clocks as well.
My word. It's outrageous.
But But I have work, and then I'm actually demoing a lot today. Mm-hmm. So I'm gearing up to go to another trip to Nashville. So that's what I'm actually demoing everything for today. So yeah, it's a lot of work, but. Well, I love it, so I can't complain.
I've got to turn around and say that if Maple Star Music and Media, obviously headed up by our very own Cameron Tilbury in his regular Wednesday slot, if they don't actually make a beeline to your door and actually say, sign for it, you should be having all sorts of people. It's absolutely outstanding. I mean, genuinely, I think you're heading into all sorts of marvellous things, Emma. And we wish you, obviously, all the very best from that perspective, because I think it's only just beginning. That's the important thing from that point of view. The crucial question, though, is here we are in Lincoln, England, as opposed to Nebraska. Easily confused. One has a cathedral, the other one doesn't. One has the Magna Carta, yeah, the other one doesn't, and so on. When are you going to make your way across the Atlantic to actually join us in Europe?
Well, hopefully next year.
Yay!
I'm excited. I have a few friends over in England, some in London and some in Cumbria, so I'm really, really hoping to get over there. I'd really love to. I've always wanted to.
Ah, and so from London to Cumbria, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, well, I mean, Cumbria is quite a hotbed. Remember, so you've got Carlisle. You're almost kind of East Coast, West Coast there, actually. So it's West.
Yeah.
Cumbria, obviously, West Coast and London, well, it's sort of central. It does its own sort of system in its own system. Obviously, we should really sort of look to get you over to Lincoln as well, actually, whilst you're around for that. But meanwhile, I can see that the listener sort of saying, now, this is fine, but let's progress with this. Emma, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic debut with us on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition today? Has it been okay for you?
Yes, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
Well, that's very important. So the next critical thing is, can we look forward to featuring you again on a fairly regular basis, I think? Because, I mean, we've just touched base with just one of your fabulous tunes, etc. So would you be up for joining us maybe in a month's time and sort of keeping us appraised of the way that Emma Lane magic continues to take over the world?
Of course. Absolutely.
Emma Lane, she will return. And I've got to ask the final question, etc. When your parents were naming you, you might want to answer this, were they at all influenced by Penny Lane? And did they sort of think, well, we'll call it Emma Lane as opposed to the Beatles' Penny Lane? Just a thought, really. It's just spring to mind, really.
Well, we are huge Beatles fans.
Yeah? I mean, it was almost, I mean, just as Michelle was there, you know, Penny Lane, she's in my heart, Emma Lane, she's in my heart. You see where we're going here? It's there. Anyway.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
I think Sir Paul McCartney should get on the case now and actually say, yeah, I'm going to actually rewrite Penny Lane and just sort of put it sort of through so it's now actually officially Emma Lane as opposed to Penny Lane. There we are.
Well, that would be an absolute dream.
That'd be really cool. Emma, have a fantastic day. We will speak again very soon, and all the very best from Lincoln, England.
Thank you so much for having me.
Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know, and all the people that come and go stop and say hello. On the corner is a banker with a motor car. The little children laugh at him.